Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good morning. So I've got a problem. I've got two speeches, one I wrote and then one from the heart. And, like Drew Brees told me when I was young, just get open. So this one will be from the heart. When someone goes and has a career like Drew Brees, everybody remembers the stats. So some of the stats, 8,358 passing yards, 572 touchdowns. Career completion percentage, 67.7. 7,000 completions, 54 consecutive games with touchdowns. I could probably do that for the next 2 hours, but I'm gonna spare you. And let me tell you who he is as a person and what made him special and what made him much more than any Hall of Fame could ever be. And that's the leadership that he brings. The leadership that he brought to me, to everyone over there, to this city and everyone sitting in this room today. I don't want to get too serious. So I remember when I first got to New Orleans, I didn't know much about football at all. Actually, I knew very little. And he believed in me. And he gave me hope in myself before I even understood, what third and 15 really meant and how difficult that was to convert. And he did it with first starting with resilience. As we all know, in 2005, he was severely hurt, had to have shoulder reconstructive surgery. And that was the same year that Katrina came through here. I was at the University of Miami and it hit us as well. And this group, Mickey included, believed in him. And what we saw was him rise with this city and bring this city back. Gave us all hope. Gave everyone in here a reason to keep fighting and to build this city back to what it is today. Another thing that separated him more than anybody that I was ever around, I was blessed enough to continue my career and play with four Super Bowl champions. But what made Drew so special was his discipline, how dedicated he was to this game. I remember, and I still, even after I left this building, received videos at 11:30 at night of tight ends getting open. And that's what makes him special, his dedication to be in first in the building and last out. To still be there at 10:30 watching film before iPads was the most insane thing I've ever seen. And it inspired me. It inspired me to do better and to become the player that I became. And then back to his leadership. His leadership style, as I went through my career, I got to appreciate how special it really was. His leadership style was not demeaning. His leadership style was leading first by action and then loving on you even when you broke off a route and there was an interception, which happened to me my second year. And I remember his words after that. Most quarterbacks, if you're double covered and you break off that route, and you end up throwing an interception, there's a few choice words on the sideline. But I remember he came to me and told me, listen, I don't care if the whole team's on you, I'm still gonna throw it. And that's the type of leader that we had. And I'm blessed to be up here. I'm blessed to sit up here and introduce not only my leader, but my brother, who has been there for me through some of the darkest times in my life. And this is a true honor. And now from the speech, since it's less from the heart. Drew, you didn't just lead the team. You led the city. And today we honor not just your stats and records, but your spirit, your character, the love you gave New Orleans. Congratulations on the well-deserved induction into the Saints Hall of Fame. Thank you for everything you've done for this team, this city, and for every single fan, including myself. That's it.
Houston Texans 2011, wasn't it?
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm telling you, it's crazy the things I forget. Like when my wife tells me, hey, you need to just pick a child up at this time and then just grab this from the grocery store and then just be, and I'll forget 68% of those things. And yet I can recall plays from 15 years ago like that. This is an incredible honor. First off, to Jimmy, I've had so many great teammates in my career and in my life, but you are absolutely one of the all-time best. Jimmy inspired me and our team on a daily basis would be an understatement. I'll never forget when we drafted him in 2010, third round pick. It was a little bit surprising because it was like we just drafted a guy in the third round who had 11 catches in college and played 1 year of college football. Mickey, what were you thinking? But then you start looking a little bit closer and say, well, seven of those 11 were touchdowns. So there must be some traits there that we can do something with. And you very quickly realize the minute that
that Jimmy Graham walked in the building that that he was going to be a special player, but beyond that, he was going to be a special teammate and a brother for life. Call him a little brother, but not so little. Quite a bit bigger. But I have many number 80 jerseys that still sit in our boys' closet with Graham on the back. It's one of our all-time favorites. Always will be. I'd like to thank so many people. I'd like to thank the Hall of Fame committee, the selection committee, the board members. Thank you for all that you do for the Saints organization, for players that dedicated so much to this organization.
Deserve to continue to be recognized beyond their playing days. This is a great opportunity to do that. It gives us a great excuse to come back and be able to reminisce and reflect and celebrate a little bit together. I've had the chance, as many of us have, over the last 10 years of my playing career to watch so many of my former teammates be inducted in the Saints Hall of Fame. And it's been a joy each and every time because it just reminds you, honestly, of why we all played this game. We played this game to be the very best. We played this game to win championships. But we played this game for the brotherhood and the relationships and for each other. So thank you for that. Thank you to Mrs. Benson and to the entire Saints organization. You are the classiest, most caring, most generous person and owner in all of professional sports. And the team that you have put together that's been a part of that for so many years, Mickey, Dennis, and others. We've always been an organization that's done things the right way, and that's because you set the tone. To Mr. B, I will always cherish the moments that I had a chance to be called into Mr. Benson's office back in my early days. He served as a grandfatherly figure in so many ways, not just to me, but to a lot of guys on the team. A lot of times I would walk in his office, and he would throw the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times in front of me, and he'd have something highlighted or circled and say, ah, look what the Federal Reserve did today. I was like, Mr. B, I'm just trying to figure out how to beat the Atlanta Falcons this week, sir. That happened a lot, but so much wisdom and so much caring that I felt from Mr. Benson. And I think his passion for this team and this community was pretty evident every time, you know, we saw him in public or on the field and many iconic moments, and he'll live with us forever. Thank you very much to the Smalls and Walk-Ons team for sponsoring today's luncheon. I was going to say, if you want the best cheeseburger slider you've ever had in your life, it's just right on. I'm just kidding. Not really. It's awesome. Thank you, guys. I get a chance to transition from being a part of one of the greatest teams and organizations in all of professional football to being part of one of the greatest organizations and teams in all of franchising. So thank you all. To my family, no matter where we live, no matter where we go, for the rest of time, when people ask our kids where they are from, they are from New Orleans. Hard to believe that my son Balin, who we held up at the Super Bowl back in Ryland, which one is Balin? Oh, they're right there, okay. That's what little sisters are for, ladies and gentlemen. He is now a sophomore in high school. I know. And when asked where he wants to go, it's LSU Tigers, baby. So the New Orleans roots run deep, I'm just telling you, and that's not going anywhere. I'd say that a lot of lot of my career and my time in professional football and here is pretty well documented, but I wanted to take this time to maybe give you a little bit more of the behind the scenes and some of the entertaining stories along the journey. So we can laugh a little bit, we can cry a little bit, but just give you some insight to just how special this organization is and all of my teammates. I will never forget the first call I got during free agency back in 2006. I had suffered a pretty bad shoulder injury with the San Diego Chargers the last game of the 2005 season, going into an offseason where I did not have a contract. As I walked off the field with my shoulder stuck like this, the thought went through my mind, well, this is the last time I'll ever put on a Charger uniform, and you know what, it may be the last time I ever play football. I really felt like it could be that devastating. I remember going to see Dr. James Andrews 4 days later in Birmingham, Alabama, to which his response to me was, because there's so much swelling, the MRI is a little bit inconclusive. I know it's bad. I don't know how bad. I'm just going to have to get in there and find out. Okay. So, all right, Doc, I trust you. So, puts me under, operates. I remember being in the recovery room, still a bit loopy with my wife by my side. And all I was saying to my wife was, did they have to cut? Did they have to cut? Because there was this whole back and forth about, depending on the severity of the injury, they may have to cut through a lot of muscle in order to fix what needed to be fixed, and that could set back the rehab process, and you know, that had a lot to do with, you know, my future. And Dr. James Andrews came in the operating room and said, if I did that surgery 100 times, I couldn't do it as well as I just did it. And that's exactly what you want to hear from a surgeon after an event like that. He said, but I've done my part, and now the rest is on you. He said, this is 8 months, no sooner. 8 months before you can get on the field again, and 2 years before you're going to feel normal. I said, well, what does that mean? He says, you're just going to have to find out. So that put me on the journey, and it was short-term goals. Hey, Doc, you know, when can I get full range of motion? He said, that's, you know, 6 weeks. I said, all right, I'm going to beat it. You know, what's the next objective? And he just kept setting short-term goals, just trying to get to a point in free agency where I could at least maybe impress somebody enough to give me an opportunity. And as free agency was approaching, there was a little bit of talk, not a lot, a few teams interested, mainly just wanting to know the prognosis and if there was even a chance that I could come back and play football again. After I had the surgery in Birmingham, Alabama in early January, it just happened to be that my in-laws lived in Birmingham. And so my wife, Brittany, and I basically found ourselves living with my in-laws for the next 4 months as I went through the rehabilitation process, which also involved me sleeping on the Lazy Boy chair in their living room because of, you know, the harness and everything else that my shoulder was in, and it was just the more comfortable way to sleep. And my father-in-law driving me to rehab every day, back and forth. So just what you want to be doing at age 28 is back living with your in-laws in Birmingham, Alabama. It was honestly the greatest thing for Brittany and I, despite the challenge of the moment, despite the fact that there was this doubt, this lingering doubt that I may not, that my dream had potentially just been ripped away from me and I would never be able to play professional football again. But being in such a loving environment for those 4 months and knowing that my every need was taken care of and I was getting up every day and I had those that were looking out for me. So Papa D, Mama D, thank you very much for that. So on the way back from one of these rehab sessions, I'm with my father-in-law, and I think it's about 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening, getting hungry, so we stop through the Arby's drive-thru, and my phone rings. I don't recognize the number, but I pick it up, and on the other line, it's, hey, Drew Brees, this is Sean Payton, head coach of the New Orleans Saints. I said, hey, coach, how you doing? Mute. Look over to my father-in-law. Who is Sean Payton? That is a true story.
At this point, it's like, hey, I'll take whatever I can get. You know, I'm at Arby's. Hey, I'll have two roast beef sandwiches. Bob, here, let me take this. Hey, Coach, how you doing? That was the first conversation with Sean Payton. Hey, we want to bring you down to New Orleans on a visit. You know, excited to meet with you. Said I don't care what they're saying about your shoulder. I said I've watched you for a long time. I know you. I know exactly what we're getting. I want you here. That meant a lot to me. And obviously the story from there with New Orleans and Miami and Saban and everything else. As the 2006 team began to be assembled that offseason, Scott Fujita was actually the first signee. I was the second, and then there was many more to come that really became the core, that really became the foundation for this run that we were about to make to Super Bowl 44. But some funny stories along the way. So I remember, and as many of us do, as it's probably emblazoned into their brains as being something that actually took years off their life, was Millsaps training camp, 06, 07, and 08. And I'm a quarterback, so I'm not running, I'm not hitting, I'm just trying to throw the ball effectively with a broke shoulder. And so as I'm bouncing balls off the turf in the beginning of training camp, and Pete Carmichael, Sean Payton is looking at Pete Carmichael saying, is he going to be able to complete a slant for us? We're all just trying to figure it out. Obviously, the Superdome was still under construction, under repair. You know, our team facility had been taken over by the National Guard and was still being put back together. And so here we were at Millsaps College for 5 weeks. And it was truly, as Joe Vitt would call it, a Junction Boys moment, if you guys recall the show or the movie Junction Boys with Paul Bear Bryant when he went down to A&M and just absolutely destroyed that team in order to build them back up. That was pretty much what Millsaps College was for us during those 06, 07, and 08 training camps. Yes, training camp was difficult, but we were building, we were molding, we were strengthening. As we approached that offseason, or excuse me, that preseason, I remember our first game was at the Tennessee Titans, and this was our first time to kind of put the product on the field. There was only a few things I remember about that game. Number one, I think we won 9-6. But what I really remember is the fact that we had a quarterback named Adrian McPherson, who was a really good athlete, and he was going to return punts for us in that game. So he went out at halftime, and, you know, the kickers go out there and, you know, kind of get their legs sighted in again, and they're kicking balls to the punt returners. And here's Adrian McPherson catching punts in Tennessee on the field at halftime. And the Tennessee Titans mascot is just ripping around in a golf cart, you know, doing some kind of a halftime show, and hits Adrian McPherson as he's trying to catch a punt. And Adrian McPherson never played again. But it was awful. But like it was a little bit of this like what more could happen to our team than what's happening right now? We're in Millsaps College, they're trying to kill us. We go on the road to think that we've escaped Millsaps College and training camp, and they're still trying to kill us. We go from there to Shreveport to play a home preseason game against the Dallas Cowboys. We get beat 50-10, okay? I mean, it was, Scott Shanley was on that field, except he was on the Dallas Cowboys sideline. Then we play another home game at Jackson Memorial Stadium in Jackson against the Indianapolis Colts and proceed to get beat 42-7 or something like that. Maybe it was like 42-3. I remember it because starters were supposed to get pulled at halftime, and we ended up going into the third quarter because we got to a point where Sean Payton was like, just score some pull, like, just score points. And once you score points, I'll take you out. But I'm not taking you out until you score some points. So finally, I think we kick a field goal in like the early fourth quarter, and we get beat 42-3 or something like that. And I think the perception on the outside was, man, this is going to be a very long season. I think many of us for a moment said, we may not win a game. But there was a moment in that game where I'll never forget it. Again, I'm coming off of the shoulder injury. I still haven't felt it. I each day is getting a little bit better, but I still haven't felt it. And there was one throw on this deep corner route on third and long. Dante Stallworth, before we traded him for Mark Seminole, runs this corner route, and the ball comes out of my hands, and it was like slow motion in the way it was spinning and then the way that it kind of fell into his grasp. And for a split second, it was like, that was it. And it was kind of late in the third quarter. Fourth quarter ends, we get whooped. We go into the locker room. Sean Payton kind of lost for words, not really knowing what to tell us. Hey, guys, keep your heads up. But, man, I could tell, like, he was super dejected and was like, man, you just kind of run out of positive things to say at some point. And I remember him going in his office, and I remember knocking on the door of his office at, you know, in the bowels of Jackson Memorial Stadium, and open up the door, and he's sitting there and looking totally dejected, which is very unlike Sean Payton. Usually very upbeat, positive, here we go. And I remember looking at him, and I just have like this grin on my face, and he's like, what are you, what could you be so excited about right now? And I said, Coach, I said, I know that things look bleak. I know that this preseason has been really tough, but I'm telling you, I felt it. Like I can feel it coming. Like this team, my shoulder, I can feel it. And it was probably a pretty off the wall comment for him, especially based on what he had just seen on the field. And yet, it's a moment I'll never forget. Then we go to the Cleveland Browns and win that game 19-14. We go on the road against the Green Bay Packers, turn the ball over a couple times in the first half, find a way to win that game. And then the storied opening game back in the Dome, September 25th, 2006. Steve Gleason block punt. The eruption, absolutely. So 2006 ends up being a storybook season, right? Make it all the way to the NFC Championship game. I would definitely say that I think the feeling amongst us that we were a team of destiny. We were carrying the city of New Orleans with us each and every step of the way. There is no way we accomplished what we did that year without the heart and soul of this city with us every step of the way. I'll be honest with you, I think we were playing way above our heads. We were nowhere near as good as we thought we were, but that's because we were riding on pure passion and emotion and heart and soul from this city. So going into the 2007 season, we get into that offseason, and before the season started, Sean Payton wanted to, it's a shame Sean isn't here to defend himself. Sean decided that, you know what, we need to throw all these accolades away from 2006, right? Like, everybody's been kissing our butt all offseason, right? We got work to do. So we're going to take all of the awards that all of us received from that 2006 season. You know, Sean Payton, Coach of the Year, you know, this award, that award, these Pro Bowls, and we're all going to put them in a coffin. We are going to dig a 6-foot hole next to the practice field. We are going to do a second line, and we are going to bury the accolades of the 2006 season in a grave next to our practice field. This happened, okay? So we did this, and his player's like, okay, I get the gist of it, but everything with Sean is theatrics, right? And it's like over the top, okay? So we go through a funeral ceremony for our 2006 accolades, and we bury them. And we start off that season 0-4. 0-4, okay? And look, like we're pissed because we know we're better than this, and yet it's just, man, everything that could have gone wrong had gone wrong. We had lost a couple close games, certainly games we should have won, and we're better than this, right? So Scott Fujita, Scott Shanley, Mark Seminole, and Brittany and I, and all of our wives, we decide, you know what? Let's all go out to eat Monday night. Let's just kind of blow off some steam. Like, let's just, you know, kind of reconvene on where we are. So, I mean, we go to Houston's on St. Charles. We have a great meal. And as we get going a little bit, we said, you know what? Like, just feel like we've kind of lost our mojo a little bit. You know, like, man, we had this mojo in 06. We had this energy. We had this, you know, like this confidence, right? This momentum. And we feel like all of a sudden that's just gone. Like it got buried somewhere. And then it was like, well, yeah, it got buried next to the practice field during the offseason. And it was like, something needs to be done about this. let's go dig up the grave and get back our mojo. So immediately we call Terry, our maintenance guy with the Saints, and said, Terry, you still at the Saints facility? Yes. Leave a couple shovels next to the back door. Why? Don't worry about it. So we drive over to the Saints facility, all four of us and our wives, right? The wives probably had a better perspective than us. And we grab those shovels and we start digging. And the wives are sitting there just laughing at us, but we are digging up. So we dig this 6-foot hole, we pull the grave out, we lay a tarp in the locker room, we put the grave there, we open it up, we kind of put all the awards out, and then we write a sign in Sharpie that just says, we're back. So the next day, everybody comes walking in, and for the guys that hadn't been there, who maybe were new signees or whatever, they're looking at this like, what is going on? We got coffins in the locker room. But we rattled off 4 in a row after that, didn't we? So 2007 doesn't end the way we want, but really we won, you know, I think 8 of our last 13 games or something like that. And so if it wasn't for the slow start, you know, we felt like, man, we're clawing back to where we know we can be. 2008 rolls around. We end up making a few key signings. Jonathan Vilma comes in from the New York Jets, a few others. And look, we're still at Millsaps, right? We're still kind of at the tail end of what is like this misery of training camp. And finally, like Sean Payton is going to throw us a bone. Now, this is back in like the real two-a-day days too, where you'd go 15 straight days of two-a-days and it was no problem, right? Those days are gone. Here we are grinding through a bunch of two-a-days, 2008 training camp, and all of a sudden Sean Payton, one day we come to the team meeting before practice and he's going to throw us a bone. It's like, hey guys, buses are pulling up, let's go jump on the bus. And it's like, oh, where are we going? You know, I'm taking you to the water park, right? So here we are, we're going to the water park. So literally Jackson, Mississippi, they closed down this water park for us. We're out there, we're having a good time, going down the slides, Lazy River, all this stuff, right? And they end up having these really steep, chutes, right? I mean, just imagine like it's 3 stories high, this slide that goes down, and then see how far you can, you know, slide out. Probably, I don't know, maybe 20 yards. To just kind of slow down, get a little friction of the water and slow down. And at the end, there's just like these little wood boards, these little wood slats. And then there's about 10 feet of concrete. And then there is a wooden fence, okay? So we get the bright idea that we should do offense versus defense and see who can make it the furthest on these, like the chutes at the bottom, right? And so it was like, okay, each side chooses up 4 guys, and you're beginning to like formulate your strategy. It's like, all right, let's get like a couple big guys up front. So they come down first, and they kind of displace the water, and then the smaller, more torpedo-like guys, then they go, and they're just going to get a little bit further each time, okay? So I went last for the offense, and Scott Fujita went last for the defense. So here we were, offense, defense, going down at the same time. Boom. You know, displaced water, next guy, second guy goes a little further, third guy goes a little further, I come down fourth, man, like my feet tap the board at the end. So I'm like, oh, we won. Like, you can't go any further. So here goes defense, boom, boom, Charles Grant. I think Charles Grant was third. So I don't know who was first or second, if Charles Grant was third. Charles Grant was third, and Charles Grant being third, his feet touch the board. And then that's when it clicked that there's somebody else coming down that is going to go much further. So here goes Scott Fujita. This, like, Michael Phelps, slender missile of a body that just glides on top of the water. And I swear he is going 50 miles an hour. As he hits this flat stretch, and he is not slowing down. He busts through the wood, skips off of the concrete, goes through the wood fence. And it's like a collective gasp amongst everybody who's there. And a moment goes by, and Fujita jumps up, and he's facing us all because he's got spun around. And he just jumps up, and we're like, yeah. And then he turns around, and it is the worst road rash I have ever seen on a guy's back. And he starts walking, and it takes about 10 steps, and then the adrenaline kind of goes away, and then literally the guy can't walk. What were you out for, like 3 weeks after that? But the best part of that story, not that that wasn't great, but the best part of that story was, we wanted to have a little fun with Sean Payton, so Fuge puts together a letter that is from an attorney. And sends it via certified mail to Sean Payton. So Sean gets it. Sean opens it. We know when he gets it, when he opens it, and it's, dear Mr. Payton, we've been informed about the incident at the water park. Mr. Fujita has chosen to take counsel and is filing a lawsuit against you for your negligence, lack of awareness in the situation, blah, 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 blah. And for a moment, Sean took this serious as he stormed out of his office. But, we got to give it back to the head man every now and then. And that was one of those opportunities. Some other funny moments from the 08 season. So we play our first London game that year against my old team, the San Diego Chargers. We end up going to play the Carolina Panthers before we fly over the pond. And it was, call it distraction, whatever. Like, we go to Carolina and we get beat pretty bad. Now, look, they were a good team. I think they ended up being the one seed that year. But we get beat pretty bad. It was kind of a mess of a game. Jeremy Shockey discovered what Spark Energy drink was prior to that game. And so, whereas like all of us normal people would have one before a game, Jeremy chose to drink six. So Jeremy Shockey normal is like level four. Jeremy Shockey with six energy drinks in his system is like level 18. So that was a wild game. We get beat pretty bad. We are on our way to the plane to fly over to London, really upset about the loss. Coach Payton decides to cut our punter, Steve Weatherford, on the bus. So Steve Weatherford gets off the bus. He'd had a rough couple weeks. His bags were already on the plane about to go to London, and he was going home. And so then we were scrambling to find another punter, which, Mickey, you could probably corroborate the story, but we had a couple punters in mind, but the guys we wanted didn't have passports, so we ended up having to sign a guy who had a passport, Ben Graham. Aussie rules punter. Who I don't think he had punted in the league yet, but we signed him because he was the only guy we could find with a passport. All right. So we're off to a great start. Great start, right? So we get on the plane. We're on our way. Ben Graham's going to meet us there, wherever he was coming from, Australia. And we get to London, and once again, we kind of had moments as a team where it was like, hey guys, we need to blow some steam off, connect as a team. That usually resulted in some really funny things happening, hence digging up the grave and putting that in the middle of the locker room. So, hey, we're going to go blow some steam off. We find this pizza joint that's just kind of right down the road from where we're staying in London. And guys kind of get word, and so it starts with 10 guys, and it's 20 guys, and it's 30 guys, and it's 40 guys. And literally, by the end of it, it's like we got the whole team. And we're in this like super authentic Italian pizza joint where literally like the guy serving us only speaks Italian. But we're having a good time, we're eating pizza, we're just blowing some steam off. And at the end of it, we decide that we are going to play credit card roulette. So for those of you who don't know what that is, it basically means that one person is going to pay for the meal. And you can do it one of two ways. Everybody puts their credit cards in a hat, and the first one you choose is the one who pays. Or you just take it all the way down to the wire. You start choosing, and then the last one left is the one who pays. So we like the suspense. So here we are, like 50 credit cards in the thing. Somebody's going to end up having to pay for the whole thing. So towards the end of the night, we had a safety named Kevin Casebaharn. Kevin Casebaharn was probably the most conservative dude like you've ever met, from the perspective of, I think he wore the same light blue sweatshirt every time he came to the office. He drove the same car he had driven since like junior year of high school. Like, he came and sat down and literally had like bread and water, okay? And we had been there for 4 hours, okay? So he sits down, and sure enough, we get to the end of credit card roulette, and it's down to two names. It's down to Kevin Casevarn and Buck Ortega. Buck Ortega was a practice squad tight end. So it's the practice squad guy who's making next to nothing, just getting beat up every day on practice squad. And it's he's the most conservative, most frugal guy on the team. And one of these guys is gonna get stuck with the biggest bill that you've ever seen. And so right now we're like, hey guys, why don't y'all just split it? Or like, and we'll help you out. And they're like, no, no, let it ride. We gotta go. And the funny thing was, is part of the comedy of this whole thing was that our Italian-speaking server, who did not speak any English, every name he pulled out, it was more comedy just to listen to him read the names off of the credit cards. So here we are, drum roll please, we're all going crazy, he's gonna draw one of these last names out of the hat, and here he goes, and he draws it out, and he looks at it, and it is the one name he can pronounce. Buck Ortega! So Kevin Casevarn gets stuck with the bill. And after that, literally we went on like three dinners with Kevin Casevarn after we ate sushi, went to like a steak joint with us. We did credit card roulette every time, and Kevin Casevarn got stuck with credit card roulette four meals in a row. To the point where he's like, hey guys, appreciate the invite, but you know, I'm gonna pass. So that was an eventful week. Good thing we won that game in big fashion. It did come down to a moment at the end. Again, this is kind of where the Ben Graham thing circles back. So we have a situation in football. It's called take a safety. This rarely ever happens. In fact, it only happened one time, I think, in our 15-year history here. And yet we practice it every day, every week. We call the group out, hey, it's take a safety, take a safety. And basically the idea is that you get the punt team out there, you snap the ball to the punter runs into the end zone, and then just kind of runs around to waste time, and then we end up taking a safety. Because, you know, through the formula, you know, based on where you are in the game, end of the game, you would rather take the safety and get your kick team out there than try to punt to maybe a dangerous punt returner, right, if it's a one-score game. So here we get to the end of this game. Ben Graham has been with us for 4 days because he was the only one with a passport. And we get into a situation at the end of the game where it's like, this is a take a safety situation. And so they send the punt team out there, and I remember looking at Ben Graham, I looked at Sean Payton, he looked at me, and I'm like, this guy doesn't know what take a safety is. So timeout, bye. And I'm like, coach, just put me out there. Like, I'll just take the ball. We're at the 35-yard line. I'm like, I'll take the ball, and I'll just turn around, I'll just throw it through the goalpost behind us so that we take the safety, we get the return team out there, or the kick return team out there, because we're about to kick a ball to Darren Sproles. Dangerous, right? We all know Sprolesy. So it's like, all right, let's think about this a little bit further. So I go out there, and it's like, hey, I'm just going to turn around and throw the ball. But I'm like, ah, oh, there's, you know, 17 seconds. I really like to run more time off. So I snapped the ball, and it was like, oh, I'll just start running. And I ran 30 yards back into the end zone, end up throwing it out. There's one camera guy that's sitting in the back of the end zone. It literally hits the camera guy in the head. Like, you can't make this up. We end up kicking the Sproles. We have a better coverage unit out there. We get him down. We end up winning the game, right? But that was the Ben Graham full circle moment, and just kind of bringing it all together from that time. So, 08, the other, I hope you guys like these stories, because these are like, all right. We're having fun. So end of the 08 season, like, man, we're just catching our stride. Like, we feel it coming, right? We feel it coming. We feel like we're on the cusp, but man, because of kind of some back and forth during the season, with losing some games maybe we shouldn't have, we find ourselves in a position where we're really just kind of fighting to get in the playoffs, right? So here we are, second to last game of the season. We are going to play the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions are 0-14, right? This is like Christmas Eve. So we're going to play them. It's like, oh, well, you can't lose to the winless Lions on Christmas. Sean Payton had this buddy from Chicago. What was our guy's name? Imperato. Joey Imperato. All right, just think about that name for a second. Joey Imperato. From Chicago. So Joey Imperato would call occasionally, and he would leave Sean. He was like childhood friend of Sean's. He would leave these messages that were like supposed to be motivational. Like, man, if we played a crummy game, like he would call up and leave Sean a message where he's just like reaming him out, right? And every other word is a four-letter word. But he this one, it was like, hey, coach, you know, you got a good thing going right now. You know, but you're playing these winless Lions. They're better than you think they are, coach. And he's like literally playing this for us in a team meeting. Because literally it was like, guys, there's nothing I can tell you about this game better than this message left to me by Joey Imperato, right? So listen to what Joey has to say. Coach, if you don't beat these guys, earmuffs, kids. No. He goes, this will be a eating Christmas. So we're like, all right, well, we know what we got to do. So we go out in this game. Well, okay, back up. I don't know what it is about punters, but we signed a new punter that week named Glenn Pakulak. Remember Glenn Pakulak? Glenn Pakulak's claim to fame, besides being a punter for the New Orleans Saints, was he was on like Bachelors in Dallas or something like that a couple years later, okay? I'm sure you can go back and find it. So Glenn Pakulak, good guy, from Detroit, Michigan. So we bring him in that week. Man, like first time punting, first NFL game in front of my home fans. So he's scrambling all week, like, hey, you got two extra tickets? Like, I gotta buy it. This guy buys like 64 tickets to the game because he's gonna have all his friends and family going back to his hometown of Detroit. And then we've got all this drama of 0-14, man, we better get our mind right. Joey Imperato's calling us out, like, we gotta go. So we go into this game, and look, like, truly, yeah, on paper they were 0-14, but they were a much better team than what their record said. Tons of close games, blah, 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 right? Like, I mean, Sean Payton made them out to be Goliath. So we get into this game, and we score a touchdown on every single possession. Every single possession. And we win the game 42-7. Every one of these was like long drive, third down. Oh, we get it. Fourth and one, we're gonna go for it. Ah. Like we score on every single drive to win this game 42-7. So what does that mean? It means that Glenn Pakulak never saw the field. Where's Mike Stanfield? 64 tickets times, I don't know, $150 each. That was a very expensive non-performance. And that led us all to the 09 season, where, hey. '06, dream season, carrying New Orleans with us every step of the way. 07, 08, man, maybe we aren't as good as we thought we were. We have a lot of work to do. We still have some pieces to bring in. The Jonathan Vilmas, the draft classes, especially that 09 draft class coming in, the contributions that all those guys made. But here we are now, 09, feeling like we're on the cusp, and we're building something. And now we have all the pieces in place. That was the most competitive off-season training camp that we've ever been a part of. We were back in our home facility, in front of our home fans every day, just battling it out. Like iron sharpens iron, like that was the mentality. We had some unbelievable speakers that off season, Ronnie Lott, Avery Johnson, where we adopted this mantra of smelling greatness and being special and finishing strong. We developed a captain's council where like, man, we are gonna lean on one another. We are gonna hold each other accountable. We are gonna extract the best out of this team. Like when Sean Payton will always tell you that like the best teams are the ones that at some point the players take control of the team. And it's no longer that the coach has to give you instructions for everything. That the players know. The players know when something needs to be policed. The players know when something needs to be said. The players know when something needs to be done. Which brings me to a moment during the 09 season. I think it was early in the season. Sean Payton loved padded practices, especially coming off tough days where he just felt like, all right, kind of a gut check day. There's no light at the end of the tunnel. Don't even look for it, right? Like, you just take it one play at a time. We're going to grind. So we get to one of these moments. I think it's a Wednesday or Thursday practice, probably a Thursday practice, where he's like, hey, we're going to go full pads. It's like, this is a – Wednesday is a full pad day. Thursday is not supposed to be a full pad day. So this newly formed captain's council, we get together in the locker room, and we're looking at each other. It's Vilma. It's Fujita. It's a few others. And we're sitting there like, hey, like, Sean wants us in full pads. Like, man, we just – guys are tired, like, guys need a little bit of a rest. Like, man, we'll go out there, we'll fly around, but we don't need to be in full pads. It's like, let's go tell Sean Payton we're not going full pads today. Like, he's always said, this is when, like, the players take control of the team, you know? It's like the next step in our evolution is leaders, right? So we tell everybody, hey, get dressed in shells, no pads. You know, everybody's pumped. So we go walking out onto the practice field, and I'm usually one of the last guys out to the practice field. So I'm in the locker room, and our guys go out there, and it's like, wow, like going to wow, you know. And then like 3 minutes later, they all come walking in, kind of tails tucked between their leg. Hey, Sean's not very happy. Fujita comes over to me. He's like, Sean Payton said, what is this, a coup? Are you trying to, like, overthrow the system here? Put pads on and get your butts back out here. So we put our pads on, and we went out to practice. there were. I'll give Sean a ton of credit. I think what we all knew about and trusted about Sean was that he always knew what was best for us. We always trusted him. To do what was always in the best interest of the team. And there were moments where that wasn't always what we liked to hear or having to do the things that we wanted to do. And yet we always knew that it was getting us ready to win, and not just win, but preparing us to be champions. And sure enough, as that season progressed, I think we all saw the fruits of the three seasons prior, and the building and the molding and the strengthening and the adding the pieces to the puzzles through trades, through free agency. And I give our personnel department, Mickey Loomis, so much credit, because winning it in anything, but especially in football, it is about culture, and it is about leadership, and it is about getting the right people in the right seats on the bus and getting them to be the very best at where they are at that moment, giving them a vision for what can be through hard work, through dedication, through commitment, and through trusting in the system. And there's a lot of places that you go, and I can't say that those guys trust what they're being told or trust the path that they're on. But I will say every day we trusted exactly the path that we were on and the place that we were going. And that leadership came from Mickey. That leadership came from Sean. That leadership came from so many of the coaches that they brought in that became mainstays here for so long. And then it came from the leaders, all of us who became better players, but more importantly, better men and better leaders as a result of being a part of this organization. And I learned so many things from professional football. I learned about leadership. I learned about perseverance. I learned about overcoming adversity. But the thing that I learned most about this game and about being a part of this organization was how to be a great teammate. And I learned that because I was surrounded by great teammates every day. Yeah, I probably played 4 years longer than I ever could have expected. I mean, I went into the 17 season honestly feeling like that could potentially be my last season. And I kept playing in large part because of my kids. And knowing that this would be something that they would remember for the rest of their life and could be a part of and could see now that they were old enough to understand the things that had helped to mold me and strengthen me along the way, being in the locker room, watching guys like Jimmy Graham, like Michael Thomas, like Zach Strief, like so many guys just work their tail off and work through so much and struggle through so much and just be the same guy every day. That's why I played those extra years, but I also played those extra years because every day I woke up saying to myself, I want to win for the guys in the locker room. I do not want to let them down. I have too much to play for. And the journey was remarkable. The lessons, the traits, the attributes learned were remarkable. And this is one of those places and one of those cities and one of those communities that, man, once you are a part of it, it is in your blood forever. And I can think of no greater club, no greater organization to be a part of than the Saints Hall of Fame, because of all of the incredible people, all of the incredible teammates that get to share in this, and the moments that we will continue to be able to create in the future as we watch our kids and our families grow up together. And we're always reminded of the years that truly molded us. So thank you very much.
Hey, Mike Valenti here, host of Cash the Ticket alongside my partner, Jim Costa. It's really simple. Are you tired of podcasts claiming they're a bunch of pro bettors when they live in their mommy's basement? Are you tired of podcasts that claim they hit 80% of the games when really they just lose like most of us? Then Cash the Ticket's the spot for you. We're real. We're transparent. We're having a hell of a good time with it. And we sit there and we're there for the sweat with you guys. We're just trying to figure it out just like you. Follow and listen to Cash the Ticket on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.